and Sundays at 15.
This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil. The death toll resulting from COVID-19 is approximately 730,000 globally and 163,000 in the United States. Brazil comes in second at more than 101,000 deaths. Infections continue to skyrocket, with the U.S. accounting for more than a quarter of the world's nearly 20 million cases. Together, Brazil and India also make up more than a quarter. With confirmed coronavirus cases in the U.S. reaching the 5 million milestone Sunday, the failure of the most powerful nation in the world to contain the scourge has been met with astonishment and alarm in Europe. Much of the stems from the fact that America has the benefit of time, European experience, and medical know-how to treat the virus. That is something the old continent did not have when the first COVID-19 patients started overwhelming its intensive care units. Yet the U.S. is still facing a sustained outbreak more than 4 months into the crisis. Australia has reported fewer new daily cases from its virus hotspot in the city of Melbourne than any one single day since last month, but it still has also reported the nation's highest daily death toll since the virus outbreak began. The state of Victoria reported 322 new infections and 19 new deaths Monday, with 14 of the deaths connected to outbreaks at aged care facilities. The figures did not include new infections and deaths from other Australian states, although Victoria has been accounting for the vast majority of both in recent weeks. Elsewhere in Asia-Pacific regions, China's number of local transmissions fell to just 14, while Hong Kong reported another 72.5 cases. This is VOA News. In the U.S. state of Georgia, the high school plans to start the week with all classes shifting online after 9 students and staff tested positive for the coronavirus as the school year opened with in-person classes just last week. News outlets report all students at North Paulding High School west of the Atlanta will take online classes Monday and Tuesday. Paulding County Schools Superintendent Brian Ott sent a letter to parents Sunday saying that those 2 days will be used to clean and disinfect the school. It's made headline last week with photos posted to social media that showed hallways crowded with students who were not wearing masks. Ott disclosed Saturday that 6 students and 3 staff had tested positive for the virus. World leaders pledged nearly $300 million to Lebanon to help it recover from its last massive explosion in Beirut last week. More than 30 leaders meeting by teleconference at the behest of French President Emmanuel Macron said that the assistance should be timely, sufficient, and consistent with the needs of the Lebanese people and directly delivered to the Lebanese population with the utmost efficiency and transparency. World powers insisted on transparency in how the aid is spent, wary of sending assistance to a government that many Lebanese view as corrupt, and also voicing concern about the influence of Iran through the Shiite group Hezbollah. Macron, who visited Beirut Thursday, said that the opening of the video link that participating nations needed to put aside their differences to support the Lebanese people, and what aid should be coordinated by the United Nations. World leaders, including U.S. President Donald Trump, called for an impartial, credible, and independent inquiry into the blast that killed at least 158 people and injured about 6,000 others. Some angry Lebanese have called for a revolt to overthrow their political leaders. An aide to Hong Kong media tycoon Jimmy Lai says that Lai was arrested under the city's national security law on suspicion of collusion with foreign powers. Hong police said 7 people had been arrested on suspicion of violating the national security law, but they did not reveal the names of those arrested. Lai owns popular tabloid Apple Daily and is an outspoken pro-democracy figure in Hong Kong who regularly criticizes China's rule. Lai's aide said police searched both his and his son's home, as well as other members of a media group Lai founded. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil.
Baker and James Bucky in Washington. First, let me say a big thank you to Jason Pantinki and producer Nicole Beckford for holding the show together while I was on vacation. Now, here are some of the stories we are covering for today, Monday, August 10th. Kenyan nurses and clinical officers are going on strike today, Monday.
The effect of this infection is equal for everybody. And we are telling the government, work of equal value and equal risk must attract equal remuneration. Do not go back to work unless you are assured that you are safe and the government is taking good care of you.
Lesotho's new prime minister governs amid COVID-19. The Liberian human rights advocate defends war crimes allegations against Charles Taylor's ex-wife. And Mali's opposition has called for renewed protest tomorrow, Tuesday.
The purpose is to ask the president to resign, because we finally came to the conclusion that the only way we can bring peace and security to Mali is for him to resign.
We take a look at women incarceration in Sierra Leone and Cameroon marked Indigenous Peoples Day yesterday, Sunday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nurses and clinical officers are downing their tools today, Monday, to demand 3 months of unpaid salaries. Nurses in other counties of the country are already on strike over what they term as poor working conditions and the increasing number of healthcare workers contracting the COVID-19 virus daily. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Kenya is approaching a health crisis as the country's COVID-19 infections peak is projected to be in September. And the Kenya National Union of Nurses and the Union of Clinical Officers have directed their members not to go to work today, Monday, following unpaid salaries and poor working conditions. The Nurses Secretary General Seth Panyako said that all nurses who have not been paid their salaries for the last 2 months will not go to work from today.
They are being paid peanuts. And yet when they are struck with COVID-19, COVID-19 is not isolating. It is not saying you are a contract nurse, you are earning 20,000, you are a lab person, you are earning 15,000 or 20,000. We will not strike you. They are going to strike someone earning 100,000. The effect of this infection is equal for everybody. And we are telling the government, work of equal value and equal risk must attract equal remuneration and equal risk allowance. Do not go back to work unless you are assured that you are safe and the government is taking good care of you. So from Monday, it is not business as usual in this country.
Already, more than 720 health workers in Kenya have contracted the disease, while 10 have died of the deadly virus. Panyako said that 4 of the 47 counties are already on strike after failing to receive their 3-month salary and lack of protective equipment.
I'm telling you, I already started. 4 are already out. They are warming up and showing others how going out looks like. You cannot work when you cannot buy food for your family. You have no money for transport to go and work. Your house is being locked. We, together with our own health workers and other county public servants, will bring this country to her knees on Monday, the 10th of August 2020.
The strike by nurses and clinical officers will affect all sections in healthcare facilities, including isolation centers for COVID-19 patients. Kenya Union of Clinical Officers Chairperson Peterson Washira said that when the COVID-19 infections will be at the peak, health officers may not be able to offer their services in hospitals.
If you don't train health workers, if you don't give them the right PPEs, when we hit to the peak and they start dying, they will unburden the facilities. We must come to the table, and we have tried to reach the CS Health so that we can get around the table and discuss the challenges, because we are the people who understand where the shoe pinches.
The Chief Administrative Secretary in the Ministry of Health, Rashid Aman, confirmed that the government provided hospitals with substandard personal protective equipment from China, making the health workers vulnerable to the virus as most of them fear contracting the disease while on duty. However, in this whole crisis, the County Government Council of Governors Chairperson Wycliffe Oparanya has faulted the national government of the predicament facing them at this time of the crisis. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Lesotho's new Prime Minister, Mokese Majoro, says his government is doing reasonably well despite the many challenges it inherited, including the COVID-19 pandemic, famine emergency, and dwindling financial resources due to poor economic performance in the Southern Africa region. In addition, Prime Minister Majoro says his government is on a mission to restore the Basotho people's trust in their own government, which he says has eroded over the years. Majoro has come under fire recently from members of his own All Basotho Convention ABC party, which is the biggest party in the current ruling coalition. He describes criticism of his government as political blustering.
We came in knowing the challenges. We come in during the COVID-19 pandemic, and this comes on top of a famine emergency that we had already declared late last year, and also on top of dwindling financial resources, which are as a result of poor economic performance in the Southern African region. But notwithstanding all these, we understand fully well the challenge and the responsibilities that the Basotho people expect from us. So top of this is that we must restore Basotho's trust in their own government.
Mr. Prime Minister, the last I checked, Lesotho had 726 confirmed cases of the coronavirus. How would you describe the human impact of this pandemic, and what is your government doing to flatten the curve?
We are doing as much as we can. We have two challenges. One is getting testing right, getting accurate numbers of the number of people that are affected. And that would lead to also an easier task of tracing all the contact for any infected person. The human and social impacts are massive. People are hungry, go without food many, many days because people are off jobs now. As you know, Lesotho supplies migrant labor to South Africa. A lot of those people that went to South Africa have come back, but they're coming back to a country that was already undergoing a state of famine.
Mr. Prime Minister, I think it was your finance minister who remarked, I think, last month that your government coffers have been severely depleted due to the impact of the coronavirus. How has this pandemic impacted Lesotho's economy?
We are not collecting taxes because the economy is pretty much at a standstill. In addition, we had to give businesses tax holidays. They don't have to be paying any taxes until about October. And so that has diminished any tax collections that we may have ordinarily expected at this time of the year. And so we are depending almost entirely on the revenues coming from our regional arrangements with South Africa, Namibia, and Botswana. That is called the Southern African Customs Union. But that will hardly be enough.
I spoke last month with a member of the National Executive Council of the All Basotho Convention Party. He's one of the supporters of former Prime Minister Thomas Thabane, and one of those who have threatened to expose what they say is your dirty secrets if you do not give in to their demands to drop murder charges against former Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. Are you aware of this, first of all, and do you have the powers to override a murder trial in a court of law?
Oh, I'm definitely not aware of it. I'm also surprised that they threatened that they will reveal my dirty secrets. Yeah, we all have secrets, but dirty ones, I'm sure we'll find out. But the point is this, these matters are in the courts of law, and the Prime Minister, nor anybody in Lesotho, has the ability to interfere in the legal systems of Lesotho. There is a clear separation of powers.
Lesotho's new Prime Minister, Mokese Majoro, was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. A member of Mali's June 5 protest movement says the group will embark on a nationwide and international protest tomorrow, Tuesday, to renew its demand for President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta's resignation. Dr. Uramata Sissoko Cisse, president of the Change in Mali movement, says Malians have concluded that the only way to restore peace in Mali is for President Keïta to step down. The renewed protest comes as it appears mediation efforts by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, have yet to bear fruit. The regional group has proposed a national unity government allowing President Keïta to remain in power. Dr. Cisse says neither the Malian government nor the opposition respect the ECOWAS recommendations because they are anti-Malian constitution.
Tuesday, August 11, 2020, we will be
having a protest in every city in Mali and every community of Malian around the world. The purpose is to ask the president to resign because we finally came to the conclusion that the only way we can bring peace and security to Mali is for him to resign.
Basically, it seems that the position of ECOWAS has not changed. The regional group wants the opposition and the pro-democracy groups to respect the constitution of Mali and join with President Keita in forming a unity government. Where do you stand?
Well, the thing is that there's no recommendation made by ECOWAS that was respected by any of the party, including the government itself, because the 31 disputed elected officials refused to resign. So we noticed that the ECOWAS made recommendations that will not resolve the problem. That's why nobody is respecting it. I believe this problem is Malian. It should be resolved in Mali.
ECOWAS says that the stability of Mali is very important to the region, especially if the region is to win the war against Islamists. ECOWAS seems to be threatening sanctions against those who it says do not wish to accept its proposal to stabilize Mali.
Well, if you look at the sanctions that ECOWAS is talking about, we don't know who they're going to sanction because nobody respected it, including the government itself. Are they going to sanction the 31 disputed elected officials? Are they going to sanction the M5? Are they going to sanction the government? Who are they going to sanction? That's the first thing. The second thing, all their recommendations are anti-constitutional. They don't respect the Malian constitution. So we cannot even follow that. All we are asking, we want a new foundation of Mali, a new beginning. So that will only start with the president resigning. That's what we said. It's like somebody treating a headache with the medicine for your food, for example. It's not the solution. So we believe that the ECOWAS should make a recommendation to the government to listen to the people.
Imam Mahmoud Diko, is he still with the opposition in his demand for President Keita to resign? In other words, is he in support of Tuesday's protest?
Actually, the thing is, the imam is a moral authority in the country. The imam is there for everybody. The government talks to the imam. M5 talks to the imam. The imam is not involved in the process in the sense that this is a political process. It's not a Islamic process or religious process. All religious authorities in Mali play roles in bringing peace and security to the country. And the imam said the president should listen to the people of Mali. If the people of Mali ask him to resign, he's asking the president to listen to the people.
Dr. Oramata Sissoko Cisse is the president of the Change in Mali movement. She was speaking with us from Lawrenceville, Georgia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 10. 2 weeks ago, Agnes Reeve Taylor, the ex-wife of jailed former Liberian President Charles Taylor, returned from exile in London and accused Swiss-based Civitas Maxima and the Global Justice and Research Project of Liberia of fabricating war crimes allegations against her. Ms. Reeves was released in December 2019 by a London court after spending 2 years in jail for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. During a news conference July 28, she said human rights advocate Hassan Belletti and the Swiss-based Civitas Maxima fabricated war crimes allegations against her as part of effort to keep their funding going. However, Belletti, founder and director of the Global Justice and Research Project, says the London judge did not dismiss the case against Ms. Taylor for lack of evidence. Rather, he said the judge dismissed the case because of legal technicality in British law.
First of all, we are disappointed, but we accept the judge's ruling. The fact of the matter is, Ms. Agnes Reeves Taylor came to Liberia and told the media and the Liberian people that the case was dismissed because there was no evidence. And this is why we are disputing. Definitely, the case was not dismissed because of lack of evidence. The evidence never got to see the inside of a courtroom. So that was a lie.
But Hassan, a judge, dismissed the case.
It was dismissed because of technical legal issues, which had to do with a 1988 United Kingdom law. The 1988 law clearly says that when a military organization or an armed group has control over a particular territory, when a crime is committed in that context by members of that armed group, for such a crime to be considered war crime, the military organization must have two conditions fulfilled. One, it must have military control over the territory where the crimes were committed. And two, it need to have civil or administrative control over that territory. For example, in the case of Liberia, the crimes are committed in Nima County. The NPFL, under that law, needed to have both military control and civil control. The judge agreed that the NPFL did have military control, but the judge was not convinced that the NPFL had civil control.
Ms. Reeves said during her news conference that you are a bounty hunter and a mercenary, and that you and your organization are manipulating Western countries and would do anything to keep your funding flowing. Are you a bounty hunter or a human rights activist?
We're a human rights advocate. I just want the world to understand that everything she said is far from the truth. We understand when people try to make a political comeback, that they polish everything to appeal to the conscience of the people. This, we believe, was the case in Liberia.
Did you say that you and your witnesses have been getting threatening phone calls? And if that's the case, who's making the threatening phone calls?
This is a legal issue, so there may be some comment I'm not privileged to make, but I have to say this. Some of our witnesses have been threatened directly by former combatants who claim to have been associated with Nigeria in the past.
Hassan Beliti is the founder and director of the Global Justice and Research Project of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Cameroon is using the International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, yesterday Sunday, to educate indigenous communities who have preserved their ways of life despite external influences so as not to be infected by COVID-19. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Mbororos and Kedis sing in Yaoundé to invite their peers to make sure COVID-19 does not get into their communities. Cameroon's indigenous people are taking part in activities marking the International Day of the World's Indigenous Populations. Grace Boulami of the non-governmental organization Indigenous Rights is one of the organizers of the activities. She says certain traditional practices can favor fast transmission should a pygmy, Mbororo or Kedi be infected.
They have this tendency to always want to hold hands and shake hands with each other. And so we went out to sensitize them that it is dangerous for themselves and for their loved ones to continue to shake hands because the pandemic spread through that method. We try to sensitize on the importance of wearing face masks, washing their hands, of social distancing.
A study carried out by Indigenous Rights, the Yaoundé-based Center for Environment and Development, and the Mbororo Cultural and Development Organization, Moscuda, indicate that no indigenous person has been diagnosed with COVID-19. Jaji Manu Gidadu, honorary president of Moscuda, says indigenous people have been free from the virus because they hardly mix with non-indigenous communities.
Indigenous people live in ecosystems that provide them with a lot of traditional herbs that they use to prevent and even to cure minor illnesses.
This year's Indigenous Populations Day was observed under the theme COVID-19 and Indigenous People's Resilience. Angelica Bimondi Ambe, Director of Social Protection in Cameroon's Ministry of Social Affairs, says the government also used the opportunity to donate hand sanitizers, water basins, soap and face masks to indigenous people.
When we talk of resilience, it means capacitating these people to fight COVID-19. And so this year, emphasis is being laid on this COVID-19 to see how these people who are excluded can be mainstreamed and make the fight against COVID-19.
Cameroon's National Institute of Statistics reports that the Central African state with a population of 25 million people, has 2 million indigenous people. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
For Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with Moto Sports, where Brad Binder stomped to victory in Sunday's Czech MotoGP to become the first South African to win a MotoGP race. The 24-year-old South African piled the pressure on race leader for some while before overtaking him with 10 laps to go. Binder's win came in just his fourth race and he termed it a dream come true. And now to athletics, where Kenya's Olympic and World 3000 meter steeplechase champion Conseslus Kipruto has tested positive for coronavirus and will miss the season opening Diamond League meeting in Monaco on Friday. The 25-year-old Kipruto said he was in great shape ahead of the event and hope to break the record, which is currently held by Kenyan-born Qatari Saif Said Shaheen. The Monaco Diamond League meeting will be followed by events in Stockholm, Lausanne, Brussels, Rome, Naples, Doha, and a yet-to-be-determined location in China. Staying with athletics, Olympic marathon champion and world record holder Eliud Kipchoge wants the government to consider reopening a few athletics training camps to enable him train effectively for October 4 London Marathon. He said it is high time he joined his training partners in camp in a bid to gauge his strength ahead of the London Marathon. Asked if Kenenisa Bekele will be a threat after coming close to his marathon record in Berlin last year, Kipchoge said he was looking beyond the Ethiopian. In basketball news, Union Monastery of Tunisia at the weekend defended their Tunisian league title thanks to an 82-77 win against Etoile Sport Raids in game 2 of the finals. It was a do-or-die game for host Etoile Sport Raids, who lost 89-69 in last Wednesday's game 1 in Monastery. The Monastery-based team not only closed the final series with a 2-0, but they also won the Tunisian league title for the second time in a row, having upset Etoile Sport Raids at last year's finals. And now to some football news. Former Super Eagles coach Joe Bonfrey has admitted he's yet to receive his Olympic gold medal, 24 years after leading the Nigerian under-23 Dream Team to gold in Atlanta. Joe Bonfrey said he was not given a medal because the provision was not made for him, which he didn't take lightly. Joe Bonfrey became Nigeria's coach in 1995 and, after his Olympic exploits in 1996, moved to become the coach of Qatar, followed by United Arab Emirates club Al Wahda before returning to Nigeria for the second time. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great day. And that's it for this Monday, August 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you will have a great week.
Border Crossings. Voice of America's Request Hour brings you an hour of great music and an escape from the news headlines, which aren't too good every single day. Tune in at 1500 Universal to Border Crossings. Make your requests by calling 202-619-2077, and we'll forget about all of our troubles and enjoy an hour of great music. Tune us in, Border Crossings, on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.